Our next guest appeared on the American radar with his Emmy-winning 1999 stand-up show Dressed to Kill, where his absurd, sharp, stream-of-consciousness style of comedy was as compelling as his outfit. While never quite leaving stand-up, he's also starred on stage in Lenny, about Lenny Bruce, and received a Tony nomination for his work in A Day in the Death of Joe Egg. He's been in movies such as Mystery Men and Ocean's 12, and he's the star and co-executive producer of the critically acclaimed FX TV series The Riches, now in its second season. Wow, that was long. I'm very pleased to welcome Eddie Izzard to our show. Eddie, that was a long introduction. You've done a lot.
Yeah, well, you didn't put in, I won the maths prize when I was 13, and I won a geography prize when I was... There's some quite small prizes that I've won over the year, which I could, to beef up my CV, or resume, as you call it, because you're French.
Wait, Eddie, I want to go back to this maths prize. If this is true, what did you receive? What was the prize? An abacus?
I received books on maths. Yeah, I don't know. I think they gave you gold and heroin. We're a very progressive school.
This is a boarding school, wasn't it? A boys' boarding school?
Yeah, you had to sleep there, even during the holidays. And then you were shot if you did anything wrong. Capital punishment was compulsory. It was a crazy time.
Were you honestly hit at school as a boy?
No, we were shot.
Shot.
We weren't hit. They would never touch us with hands, but they would shoot us if we, you know, were late. They'd shoot you in the leg usually. You know, it makes you limp, and then the blood, and then mm-hmm. the tigers follow the blood scent, and then you have to fight off tigers. There weren't many tigers in England at that time.
Was this a posh school, though? I mean, speaking of shooting, was there like falconry? Did you learn those kind of things?
We did compulsory falconry. Everyone had a falcon, and you had to.
I don't believe you.
Of course not. Do we do falconry? Who does? Does anyone? Are there any American schools where falconry is there?
No, but we don't have posh boarding schools. Like,
no, what are you thinking of? Harry Potter? Didn't they have some sort of? They have owls, don't they? Yeah, we had owl. We had an owl each.
I'm going to interrupt you because we have to get to The Riches, and then you
and
can go on.
That's why you
and
should
on.
Watch The Riches.
Let me give a little background on The Riches. It's about a family of. Here we go. Ready, everybody? Irish-American con artists, the Malloys, who take on the identity of a couple, Doug and Shireen Rich. This couple dies in a car accident in front of the Malloys. So the Malloys move into the Rich's swanky upscale house, and your character, Eddie, even takes over Doug Rich's job as a lawyer.
Yeah. And we should mention, they were in the process of moving when the car crash happened, so no one had met them at the new place they were going to, which is why we could take over their lives.
If I get this straight, that means you as an actor are a British man playing an Irish-American who's pretending to be a Southern lawyer in Baton Rouge. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm just pretending to be a lawyer. It doesn't matter quite where I'm from. It's set in the South, but I'm not playing Southern. I'm playing sort of Northern Eastern-ish more. But yes, apart from that, everything's correct.
Now let's.
But you know, it's about outsiders trying to be insiders, the Riches, and most of the family are actually not American. We have a Canadian, two Brits, and young Aidan is sort of half Irish because he spent most of his life in Ireland.
Right. Your co-star Minnie Driver is British, and the creator Dmitry Lipkin is Russian.
Russian. Yeah, he was till 12, and when he was 12, he moved to Baton Rouge. So he's an American, but the first 12 years he was a Russian. So he's got the Russian blood going through him.
You know, it seems it's kind of. I mean, The Rich is about the dark side of the American dream, and it's probably no accident that people from other countries are able to give us this perspective on America. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, America was made up of so many immigrants coming in, and then you get this feeling of belonging of people, second generation, third generation, and then there's this feeling of belonging. But it is a great country to talk about people, outsiders becoming insiders. And the American dream is a very good dream. It's a very aspirational, come on, let's go build it. What those immigrants first came in saying, let's leave behind the hereditary privilege situation and get to a place where it's a complete meritocracy. Maybe America's gone... So far, it's actually turned back into a place where, you know, the super rich can start off way ahead of everyone else. And so it's almost recreated what was in Europe from before. But it's a dream. The American dream is even bigger than America. I think it's a world dream. I think, you know, people in Angola, people in Siberia are also saying, yeah, I'd like to have a big house and a couple of cars and not have to work every day. And so it's something that can play out as a world story. It's a great canvas to play on.
Let's listen to a scene. Here, your boss, he's a simpering mess because he misses his estranged wife, Gigi, a former stripper, and your character gives him some perspective and advice. Let's listen.
Gigi stole your mojo. You go back to her, she's just going to steal more. You'll have negative mojo. Believe me, there's only one way you're going to get it back.
How?
You got to reclaim your power. This is simple law of physics. Gigi stole something from you, right? You got to replace it with something equal and opposite, yet bigger and more powerful, like $150 million. By you hills, a lasting legacy to the genius that is Hugh Panetta. That's you, the source of all your power.
No.
Gigi's Delilah to your Samson. She's kryptonite to your super mojo.
Of course, as always, Wayne is really looking out for himself there, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think he does kind of like Hugh Panetta, who is a charismatic bastard, if you can say that word, charismatic, on radio. But he does need to, there's this whole deal, $150 million deal going down, and Hugh is getting totally sidetracked on getting love lorn, and he's just got to get him back on track, get it in the doing the deal so that he can pick up, so that Wayne can pick up his $13 million, because this is the first actual deal that he's actually going to legitimately earn it, even though he isn't actually Doug Rich and he's pretending to be him. He actually is holding down a legitimate job, and so he will actually earn this money. It's quite bizarre. He's lied and cheated to get to a place where he's actually doing something of worth,
right,
even though there's other dodgy things that are coming into the deal, and now there's the Russian mafia are coming into the deal, and it's getting very complicated. But, you know, he is an energizer bunny. Wayne will not stop. That is very based on me, or I wanted that to be in him, or it's very handy that it's in him, because I won't stop. I'm just a relentless idiot.
Well, you also say, I mean, Wayne Malloy, a.k.a. Doug Rich, is clearly a natural-born manipulator. And on your website, you say that you were a hustler even as a little kid in school in Wales. What were you hustling?
I was selling kids crayons. I was trying to – I remember there was a kid, and I said, look, there could be a war. You know, there could be a nuclear war. And if the bomb goes off, you'll want crayons. You got to write help. I seem to be using vast – overriding ideas, world famine ideas to sell crayons to some kid. So, yeah, I've always been a hustler. And Lenny Bruce said this, and I totally agree with him. You know, he said he was always a hustler, and I am. I'm just trying to work an edge to get on. I'm trying to do it in as good a way as I can. I'm not, you know, I've moved beyond the crayon days. And so now I'm trying to do good work. Or, you know, back then, hopefully the crayons were really good crayons I was trying to sell.
What makes good hustling?
Well, good hustling is just seeing opportunities come up and jumping on them. And well, I think the really good hustling, actually, and this isn't really hustling, the really good selling and hustling are put together. But if you take a great idea and put that over, like doing gigs in French as I do, that's a great hustle. It's a hustle that kind of works against me. But I'm going to the French and saying, je vais faire mon spectacle tous en français, and then they're going, the English guy's going to do it in French? Okay, maybe we go and see it. So that's an interesting hustle. It's a hustle that I have to work my backside off to get.
And
but,
you
that's perfect for me.
Yeah, you do your stand-up in French. You've said you want to learn German and Russian and Spanish and Arabic.
Yeah.
Is it different when you're performing? Is your comedy different when you're performing in another language?
No, I do it exactly the same. If I'm in Paris or if I'm in New Zealand, Seattle, Iceland, same gig. I want to keep it exactly the same.
Why do you want to perform in so many different languages? Is this all part of a world domination?
It's to hustle them. No, it's not. It's not world domination. It's world. It's not invasion. It's not world invasion. It's world infusion, like tea. I want to be like tea around the world, and just slowly. Yeah, well, I like talking to people. I like people. There's 6.5 billion people in the world, and I'd like to meet them all in a room.
You've claimed that it's your manifest destiny.
You didn't react that at all, did you? You just jumped over that. Fine. Sorry.
I'm sorry if I stopped to laugh at all your ingenious jokes.
No,
you at least
comment on it. You don't have to laugh at it. Just no comment on meeting 6.5 million people. Billion people. Did I say million? I meant billion.
I feel really pressured for a comment on that. I can hear you hydrating during this interview, by the way. Are you quite thirsty?
Do you call it hydrating? I'm actually sucking out of a coffee thing, you know, through the hole in the coffee thing. But I like doing real noises in stuff.
As opposed to the fake noises you usually do for your radio interviews?
Well, no. Radio is normally so, you know, it's so like this.
Yes.
And we're stuffed into
radio.
A cupboard. And we're both talking in a cupboard. The fact is you're actually about 3 miles away from me, aren't you?
Isn't that silly?
That is silly. We're meeting in the same town 3 miles away.
You recently told the New York Times, because the world stopped me getting anywhere, I was ready, really, at 7. I was ready at 10. And even now you said your attitude is a relentless, I will not stop until I get the thing. So what is the thing?
The thing is, I wanted to do I wanted to be an actor when I was at 7. And now I'm finally doing the acting. The great role, Wayne Malloy in The Riches. It's perfect. I love doing that. So I am, though, 109 years old. So
you look good.
I look fantastic for this age. But it's taken me such a long time to get here that, like Clint Eastwood in his 70s said, I'm just getting it going now. That's what I'm thinking. It's taken so long to get here that now, okay, I've got the bit between the teeth. Let's go. Let's start. Start the clock now. And my comedy is in a nice place, and my drama's coming up, and I have this schizophrenic career. So that's what it is. That's the relentless thing was based upon the fact that I thought I could do this years ago, and now mm-hmm. I'm doing this, and I feel like I'm playing catch up. I just want to make things. I'm a creativist.
Mm-hmm.
There are capitalists who like to make things to make money. And the money is the thing that they worship. And then they take all the money and they stick it in their ears and they go, I've got money, I've got money. And then they die. That's the capitalist. And then I'm a creativist and I like to make money to make things. I like to make things. I make things that you can wind up in the burp and the little, you know, those teeth that go across the table and
the
little
teeth?
Gonks. Yeah, you know, those teeth. You wind them up and they go.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know those.
That's what you want to be?
No, that's what I want to make. I don't want to make the teeth. Someone's already made the teeth. But I invented I've invented things in my head that I want to make. My dad said I've come up with a lot of stupid plans through my life, and now some of them have worked.
What's the stupidest plan that worked?
Well, transvestite doing stand-up gigs in France in French. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know how stupid that is.
Well, is that on your top 10 list? Is that the thing that you tell everyone to do? I think you don't choose to be a transvestite, but, you know, it's just not your next. I like to do moves. I'm very military about it, and I like to do moves that are just very weird.
Finally, I want to ask you this. Your tour is called Stripped, and you usually like to perform in a dress when you do stand-up. Are you going to be naked for this?
No, I don't usually like to. What happens is it's quite a long thing. Being a transvestite, you can keep quiet all your life and you live, you know, with this secret in your head, and then maybe you die and you never told no one, and it's not good. And I think it's best to be honest. You know, it's the third millennium, for God's sake, even though I don't believe in him. And so I feel that you should tell people things. So I told everyone this, and then people didn't believe me, the critics, because I was doing stand-up in Britain. So I said, okay, I'll wear a dress. So I started doing that, and then they said, okay, you look a mess in the dress. So I started trying to get that better. And by the time I came to America, I just wanted to do it in one lump. I wanted to arrive, wear some makeup, and then the people wouldn't get confused. And then they weren't confused because they came and watched the shows, but they were confused thinking that makeup's got something to do with the comedy, and it hasn't. So the Stripped idea is just paring back on things, just concentrating on the material, and I'm going out in boy mode. There's boy mode and girl mode I have, because I'm like a superhero, like the Human Torch, because he can do flame on or flame off. He's not always flambé, is he?
No.
Sometimes he turns up sans flamme, sans flambeau.
And I'm laughing audibly now, okay?
I like the way you say, I am audibly laughing.
I am.
By
I'm
using
telling
the
you.
Spoken words of laughter.
Eddie, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Not at all.
Eddie Izzard stars in The Riches, which airs Tuesdays on FX. His Stripped comedy tour of America begins later this month. For more information, go to our website, morefairgame.org.